Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy here with Pat, and today is Monday, September 14th.
Bitcoin is trading up 3.29% to 10,668. ETH is also up to 377, up 3.86%. Polkadot is now in the top five by market cap. That's a big change. $4.5 billion market cap. Is that right? Damn, that's big. Price at $5.35, up 8.5% in the last 24 hours.
All right. Thank you to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a digital asset management platform that does DeFi investment monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. All right. First, DeFi lender BZX loses $8 million in third attack this year.
Yeah, this was another smart contract issue. They had a bug in their smart contract to let people send coins to themselves at an accelerated rate, pulled a bunch of money out. I'd say, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. No, so flip that. But it is. It's not great. It's hard to imagine that BZX sort of stays. They actually do have quite a bit of money under management. It's hard to imagine that it stays there. So I'd be pretty cautious about them. Smart contracts are tough. Don't get me wrong. Like, code for smart contracts is very complicated. This stuff is not easy. But this is even after like several audits, they still are having these kinds of issues. That's a bad sign.
All right. Well. Next, DeFi is booming again, but experts caution that mainstreaming won't occur until decentralized exchanges integrate layer 2 options.
I disagree with this. I think that layer 2 is a bit of essentially a layer 2 exchange is most likely going to look a lot like a centralized exchange. I think that this gets back to a long discussion that's been happening about layer 1 protocol. So Ethereum, Bitcoin, those are layer 1 protocols. Layer 2 are things that get laid on top of it. So this is Lightning Network. This is big block streams. They have a layer 2 solution. There's a couple Plasma for Ethereum. The issue is that the math just doesn't tend to work out well to maintain decentralization on the layer two protocols. And at the end of the day, a layer 2 protocol that's more centralized than the decentralized process is never going to work as well as just an exchange. So if you're more comfortable with centralization, then you would just go to an exchange. And if you're more comfortable with, if you really want the decentralized piece here, then you're going to wait. You're going to use either, the Ethereum network right now with the slightly higher fees, or you're just going to wait until Ethereum itself starts to scale with their sharding strategies and things like that. So I tend to disagree with this. I think it's an interesting way to look at the problem. I think that, I like that there's always excitement happening here. There's always new research going into this. But I think that the real mainstreaming happens once we get to a more scaled Ethereum network that can support a lot more transactions. That's where it really happens.
All right. Sounds good. Next, changes at SushiSwap will see block rewards cut by 90%.
The sushi drama continues. So this is after after the FTX CEO took over, a group of people that are now doing governance of the sushi tokens. I think there's a inherent flaw in the way sushi's doing governance. I think that the people who are the major investors in sushi are not going to like it. Sushi already had problems with the way that they were vampire money on top of Uniswap. The only thing Sushi had going for this, it's just kind of crazy because the only thing Sushi has going for it is its governance token and its big rewards. So essentially, like, when you look at the APYs and they're like, hey, 30,000% APY for SushiSwap compared to Uniswap at 0.3%, whatever it is, that comes from having this governance token. That comes from doing big rewards on top of that governance token. Obviously, there's an issue with unlimited inflation as I'd say economists kind of know, but the SushiSwap is like at this point less than a month old. I mean, it's still too early to be really scaling back rewards significantly. So I think this is a super interesting move, but I don't see it working out great for them. But who knows?
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see. All right. Also, BitMEX Research announced that they installed a Bitcoin satellite system.
Yeah, this is such a fun story. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as news per se. The idea of being able to do a Bitcoin satellite has been around for a long time. So one of the things that has happened is that Blockstream, who's one of the big supporters for Bitcoin, one of the sponsored VC-backed companies that helped develop Bitcoin, or that people who developed Bitcoin ended up at, some of the early developers, last year bought a couple wireless time on a few satellites, and they essentially broadcast blocks over satellites. The reason this is really cool is that, you know, if you're in the crypto space, you will hear a lot of discussion about Bitcoin versus Bitcoin Cash. And the satellite to me is the ultimate expression of Bitcoin versus Bitcoin Cash. The satellite is designed to essentially be a completely circumventive method to any sort of government censorship over Bitcoin. But in order to do that, you have to have block sizes and block frequency at the rate that you can broadcast it over a satellite. And so satellite transmission rates are still pretty low. I think that they can do a block in about 5 minutes, something like that. It's 2 to 5 minutes to transmit a block, which is slow compared to a network. And so this is to say that if you're in China, and China one day, you know, there's a lot of miners in China making a lot of money. If China decides to cut off access to the Bitcoin networks entirely through their firewall, the miners in China could actually still mine. They could get blocks off of the satellite, and then they could use ham radios, which is another way that people have actually created blockchain infrastructure for Bitcoin to transmit the new blocks that they've mined. So I wouldn't say there's nothing they could do, but it would be incredibly difficult for China, as the most sophisticated censoring country in the world for internet censorship, it would be extremely difficult for them to stop people mining Bitcoin. And that is by design. Now, with something like Bitcoin Cash or Ethereum, you just couldn't do that. The size of the blocks, the frequency of the blocks is way too high to be transmitting that over traditional networks. So over the satellite network. So this is why when people say that Bitcoin is designed to be censorship resistant versus other coins that are out there, this is an example of what they're talking about, because this is something that you could not do with higher protocol frequency or larger disk space usage, but it really adds a almost impenetrable layer of censorship resistance to Bitcoin.
All right. Well, that's great. Speaking of Bitcoin miners made $368 million in revenue during August.
Yeah, you got to imagine a lot of this has to do with, renewables having gone through the roof and become way more affordable, energy consumption being down over summer, even though it was a hot summer this year. Obviously, energy consumption compared to last year was still way down. So it was a good August for Bitcoin for miners, and that's a lot of money. Plus, it doesn't hurt that the price of Bitcoin is up. We always talk about that. That directly impacts miners.
All right. Next, Yearn Finance is launching a MakerDAO-like stablecoin lending protocol with no governance token.
Yeah, this to me was really interesting, because Yearn was another one of these early projects that was very governance-centric. And so just like Sushi, I was really surprised to see them doing this. Now, MakerDAO is a pretty cool protocol. I mean, it's a marketplace protocol with basically buyers and sellers against their DAO and marketplace of, or I guess you could say a set of users that monitor for liquidation events. So it's a cool, like MakerDAO is a pretty cool model, and it was very clever. It was one of the early DeFi projects, I think you could say. So I'm not sure why they would be doing like kind of a Me Too product, and I'm definitely not sure why they would step away from their governance models. That's all really interesting to me. So we'll have to keep an eye on it, but it seems out of character for them.
All right. So last, let's touch on Chainlink. So first, the trading pattern of Chainlink's Link crypto suggests some suspicious activity and manipulation.
Yeah, I read through this article. It was very interesting. We'll tweet it out, so you should go read it as well. I find it very difficult to differentiate what they're calling pump and dump versus, you know, what happens with the crypto market on a day-to-day basis. End of the day, the crypto market is not regulated in the same way the most traditional markets are. So it doesn't have the visibility, doesn't have the transparency, doesn't have the rules around wash trading or anything else. So there's a lot of chicanery that happens in the crypto markets. So every time you see a run up on a Sunday afternoon when volumes are low, when you see a $500 run up of Bitcoin, like that is, I guarantee you that is some form of market manipulation. Like that is someone who wants to move the market for Monday morning. So this happens all the time. I'm not sure. It was not clear to me how they were really differentiating Chainlink from any other crypto. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me that there were people trying to optimize trading and whales of Chainlink moving large amounts of money to move the market. That happens with every crypto. So I didn't think, you know, this is a tough one to really call a pump and dump, because it's, you know, they also have real news backing them. So a traditional pump and dump is a penny stock that someone buys, gets some like forced media coverage or forced news coverage, or just goes to Twitter to pump, gets it up a little bit and then sells it. This is more like, you know, I'd say, you know, consistent manipulation of stock prices than what I think you'd traditionally consider a pump and dump.
All right. Well, Chainlink is currently at about $12 with a $4.2 billion market cap. And that will do it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily.
All right. Have a great one.